Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It is Nick Wright for Colin Cowherd on the Herd. Later this hour, about 15 minutes. Oh my gosh, I've been dreading this. Eric Mangini joins us. I typically love having Coach on. This is going to be rough. I would bet, well, I'm out of money to bet, but if I still had money left to bet, Joy, I would bet that before Coach says a word, he laughs. And he's laughing at me when that happens.
If you had any money to bet, you should most certainly put money on that.
That's the problem of your bets. Okay. You can believe it. We talked about it yesterday. You're now just rubbing it in that I went 0 for 11. You're just really just rubbing it in that I went 0 for 11.
I went 0 for 5. It makes you feel any better.
No, it doesn't. Because I know you and I know your level of responsibility. And I know that while you're mad you went 0 for 5, you're not actually feeling a lot of pain. You're not like, oh, not going to be able to, you know, not getting my nails done for a few weeks. I'm curious if my fancy car payment's going to go through. No, you're fine. I'm moving money around. My wife that you adore so much, I'm having to do things like send texts behind. Can somebody send me this? There's a lot going on, Joy. There's a lot going on in the Wright household. Why do you think I picked up these extra shifts? I hit up Fox. I'm like, hey, I need time and a half or something. I gotta keep this going. Speaking of money, Joy, there's three ways an employer can show respect to an employee. And I think Jadakiss said it once: money, power, respect. And Russell Wilson already has the money. He doesn't have the power. And I think he's looking for the respect. And there have been these kind of odd rumblings. Like, is Russell Wilson happy in Seattle? Could Russell Wilson be available? Brandon Marshall, on a really brilliantly produced, wonderfully broadcast television show called First Things First, that's on from 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. every day on this very network, a few weeks ago, just kind of like almost in passing, said, I'm hearing that Russell Wilson could potentially be unhappy in Seattle. And it was an odd thing because Brandon Marshall had played in Seattle, seemingly has a good relationship with Russell. But that was like the first I had heard of it since on this show a year ago, Colin Cowherd was floating the idea that, do Russell Wilson and Sierra, who he inexplicably always calls Ciara, I don't know why that has, it's just like in his head, are they happy in Seattle or do they want to go somewhere else? But then Seattle gave Russell Wilson the money. They made him the highest paid quarterback in football. And now we're hearing, Jason Lockenfora tweeted last night, he's frustrated about the Seahawks' inability to protect him, that maybe Russell Wilson wants a little more power and a little more respect as far as a seat at the table. He was on this morning with Dan Patrick, and here's what he said about that.
I think that ultimately, for me personally, I think that I want to be able to be involved because at the end of the day, it's your legacy, it's your team's legacy, it's the guys you get to go into the huddle with. And at the end of the day, those guys you got to trust.
Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, I think that,
Do you want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often.
So that's pretty telling from a guy who never says anything. From a guy who every interview I've ever seen him do, he finishes with "Go Hawks." From a guy who literally just won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award and is as respected across the league as anybody and as team first as anybody across the league. That is Russell Wilson, not privately, not leaking to a friendly writer who will source it vaguely. Russell Wilson going on camera saying, yeah, I'd like to be involved, and no, I'm not involved. He also then was asked about the reports that teams called about his availability, something that Brandon Marshall put a fine point on this morning on my show, on our show, I should say, when he said the Saints, the Bears, the Jets, the Raiders, and the Dolphins have all shown varying levels of interest in acquiring Russell Wilson. Russell was asked about trade rumors, and here's what he said to that.
I definitely believe they've gotten calls, for sure. I didn't think that, you know, I think anytime you're, a player that, you know, tries to produce every week and has done it for, you know, consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, but you're a franchise quarterback. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're not available, are you?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question.
So that right there is a really interesting answer. And I'm not criticizing Russell Wilson here, but I am saying that I think in happier times with Seattle, this would have been Russell Wilson's very polished, very clear, very calculated answer. Well, of course, it's flattering to be wanted, but I can tell you my plan is to play for one team only, the Seattle Seahawks. I never want to go anywhere, and I would be shocked if they are even considering trading me because this is the only place I ever want to play. I don't think that's how Russell Wilson feels, and I do not blame him. And there are two different avenues to walk here, but they take us to the same place. The first avenue is the respect, which is, if he wants a seat at the table, give him a seat at the table. What I think some of these franchises don't understand is that if you are the Houston Texans, do you know what everyone's job with the Texans should have been the last 3 months? Make sure Deshaun Watson's happy. Oh, he likes the equipment manager? And somebody in the building wants to fire him, as happened this weekend. Not only equipment manager are you not fired, you're Deshaun's buddy. You can have a raise. You can have a new office. What do you want? And the same goes with Seattle. Your franchise must be kept happy. Your franchise must want to be there. That is the whole purpose of the NFL, is to get a player such as Russell Wilson. So once you have him, you hold on to him for dear life. You are happy and count your blessings that for the better part of a decade, there was no extra drama surrounding him. But the moment there is, though, you deal with it. That's your job. But here's the other thing. And this is where it gets to the modern NFL, and Kevin Clark mentioned it. I don't think Russell Wilson would want or demand a seat at the table if every time he sat down for a seat at the table is the wrong. Yeah, seat at the table is what I'm trying to say. If he had full faith that the Seahawks were as all in as the teams against whom he's competing. But think about Russell Wilson's experience in the NFL and what he has seen work. He comes into the NFL. The Seahawks made a very bold move. They had signed Matt Flynn 2 weeks into practices. Nope, Russell's our guy. They were rewarded with two trips to the Super Bowl. Right before Seattle started going to the Super Bowl, who went? The Niners. You know how? Oh, Colin Kaepernick? He's a backup? Nope, he's the starter. Gives us our best chance. We'll make that change midway through the year, make the Super Bowl the next year, and be, for a short period of time, one of the two best teams in the conference. Keep going. Philly. Oh, we don't have a quarterback? We'll trade multiple first-round picks to move up, to get a quarterback. During the year, we will be super aggressive at the trade deadline. We will borrow from tomorrow's cap to pay today. We'll win a Super Bowl. The Rams. Oh, we don't have a quarterback? We'll trade multiple first-round picks to get him. Oh, he stinks under Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher, you're out. Sean McVay, you're in. Oh, we need more weapons. Brandon Cooks, we'll trade a first-round pick for you. Go, go, go. They all went to the Super Bowl. The Chiefs. Chiefs make the playoffs with Alex Smith. They win the division year after year. Not good enough. Trade up for Mahomes. Go, trade for Frank Clark from Seattle, by the way. Go, go, go. Win a Super Bowl. Make another one. Tampa. We're not satisfied. Go get Brady. Trade up in the draft for Wirfs. Go get Grunt. Go get AB. Go, go, go. That's everyone that has made the Super Bowl in Russell Wilson's career as a star quarterback, with the exception of the Patriots. All the other Super Bowl appearances I didn't mention were made by the Patriots, who are doing things their own way. Seattle, one wonders if it fancies itself a bit of the Patriots of the Northwest. Players play, coaches coach, we're building something long term, we're building something sustainable, we're building a dynasty. The problem is there's no dynasty. They made the Super Bowl in Russell's second year and won it. They made it back in year three and haven't been back since, and haven't been particularly close since. And Russell Wilson is watching, I would imagine with frustration, as the Rams in the division say, nope, trade for Stafford. We need to get better. The Niners. Oh, I left out the Niners. They're another team that made the Super Bowl. What did they do? They went and traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. They kept pushing. They watched the Niners make the Super Bowl. Watch the Cardinals. Spend a first-round pick on a quarterback. After 1 year, nope, not going to be good enough. We're going to change everything up. And Seattle is just standing pat. And I think Russell Wilson is sitting there saying, guys, let me get involved. Because this idea of just all bail you out, I'll get sacked 25 times more than Mahomes did this year, 26 times more than Brady did this year, and you'll just expect me to solve everything, that ain't going to work. You know, to quote Fredo from Godfather 2, I'm smart. You can listen to me. Give me a seat at the table. So Russell Wilson watching the Seahawks just say, no, we're going to build slowly. When everyone else is go, 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 and all those teams are making the Super Bowl, and his team isn't. His team is instead following the blueprint of, and you can be like, what blueprint is better? The Patriot Dynasty blueprint. But the Patriot Dynasty had two ingredients that the Seahawks don't have. They have Brady, and as great as Russ is, he ain't Brady. And they have Belichick, and as great as Belichick is, and great as Carroll is, he's not Belichick. And by the way, as soon as one of those guys left, maybe it was, you know, Brady's back in the Super Bowl, Belichick 6-10. So I don't think the Russell Wilson story is a non-story. I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think they John Schneider and Pete Carroll need to look around that war room they have and say, let's make room for another chair. Because Russell Wilson wants to pull up a seat to the table. And if anyone's earned it, it's him. You can pay a guy with money, power, and respect. And the best of the best in the world at what they do want all three. He's got the money. He kind of has the respect. Now he wants some of the power. You better damn well give it to him. Eric Mangini, I'm guessing, disagrees with everything I just said. And I know he's going to laugh at me about the Chiefs losing. That'll be fun for all the viewers and miserable for me. That's next. Nick Wright in for Colin on The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It is Nick Wright in for Colin on The Herd. 20 minutes from now, Kevin Garnett got something exactly right. And then Steve Kerr went and undercut Garnett's whole point unknowingly. We'll do that about 20 minutes from now. Joy's going to come up with Herdline News. Not come up with, but Joy, she's already got it ready. But Joy's going to do Herdline News in about 10 minutes. And if it seems like I'm stalling, it's because I am a bit. Because normally I really look forward to talking to this person. But today I dread it. But I just got to get it over with. The first one's going to be the hardest. We're joined now by a three-time Super Bowl champion, the guy who was there when Tom Brady was drafted, and he's a guy who's a Patriot, original Patriot, all this. Eric Mangini. Hi, Coach. How are you?
Oh, Nick, I heard you talk about me coming on and saying I was going to make fun of you and laugh at you. I think I've been very sensitive to your feelings during this difficult time where you were so incredibly wrong. I didn't text you after the game. I didn't call you after the game. I didn't gloat about all the ways that you were wrong. I think I deserve a little bit of credit for that because of our friendship and how, you know,
that's true.
You
didn't rub it in.
You didn't rub it in.
That is true. To coach's credit, he didn't rub it in. In fact, he texted me Monday saying, are you okay yet? And I said, I don't know. And the follow-up was, okay, just wanting to know how long I have to wait before I make fun of you. And now you're on the show today. So you did at least give me about a 36-hour grace period. Okay, so here's my question, coach. Mm-hmm. I want to do something near and dear to your heart about the game, and then we can go big picture. I thought this goes on the list of, as far as defensive coaching performances, what Belichick did in the Bills-Giants Super Bowl in 1990 against Jim Kelly and that seemingly unstoppable offense held him to the teens, what you guys did to the greatest show on turf, and then what Todd Bowles did. I understand the Chiefs' offensive line was banged up. That's not the whole story there. When you were watching it as a defensive coach, what were you seeing and what was your level of appreciation for what they were able to do?
Well, there are a few things that I looked at and I really liked that Tampa Bay was doing. First of all, they did play complimentary football, and I know you've heard that term a million times, but I thought both sides had a very sound approach, especially based off what happened the first game. The thing that Tampa did really well this time is they were going to take away Tyreek Hill, and they were going to play from high to low, and they were going to mix in a bunch of split safety defense where they actually went up and were able to jam some of the receivers. And there were multiple times where they had someone on Tyreek Hill and hitting him so that he couldn't get a clean release. Now, looking at that, I really expected that Kansas City would have run the ball more than they did. And I think that was the biggest issue. They ran the ball, what, 9 times with Hilaire, and 3 of those were in the first drive of the second half, and very effective. But when you've got 2 tackles that you know are going to struggle, and they're playing 7-man boxes, which gives you an opportunity to run, and you don't run, that's a problem. And it could have created so many other opportunities for the offense. And look, I know it's hard when you're as prolific as they are passing the ball to think, okay, we're going to establish a running game. But by not doing that, it caused problems. It caused real problems.
So if they were going to just drop back and pass, then the question, and they score no touchdowns, I think the simple explanation is Mahomes didn't play very well. How much of this, in your opinion, is on Mahomes? How do you think he played?
No, I don't think it's all a function of Mahomes. There were several times, especially early in the game, where guys were covered down the field, and look, he did have less time than he traditionally has because of the problems they had on the O-line and how good Tampa's defensive line is, and he scrambled for the first down, and that's what you do against split safety defense with man-to-man. Everybody's got their back turned, and he was able to go get some first downs, and he made those incredible throws in the second half that were incompletions, but there were some pretty incredible incompletions in the first half, too. The one that hit Tyreek Hill in the face mask in the end zone. I think Kelsey dropped one, at least one in the first half. That was another off-balance throw that Mahomes had. You have to help him. And as much as he is a Superman, at some point you still have to be able to help that guy, especially if they're struggling.
All right, let's go bigger picture now, and let's never talk about the Super Bowl ever again our whole life.
Yeah, we didn't even get to talk about
Bruce
Tom
Arians.
Brady and all that he did.
I'm going to get to Brady here.
We've got a lot of time.
Yeah, we got a whole offseason. We got a lot of time. All right, so Bruce Arians said before the Super Bowl, but it came out yesterday, that he believes Brady was motivated by proving it wasn't all Belichick. And I've talked with you a bunch about this, and we don't need to rehash the ground of Brady gets there, he's a sixth round pick. You guys saw these amazing traits, but Tom did it himself, but also with a lot of great coaching, molded himself into who he is now. That to me is not the most interesting part. The interesting part is the end of the relationship. And that is what I want to know when you have you know both guys, if you think how much that motivated Brady. That Brady believed, I can still do it. And Bill believed, you're not going to be able to still do it. And I'm not going to be caught late on this. I'm never late on this. And that, even if you guys get all shared credit for the beginning, the end was not how Tom wanted it to be. So how much of Brady this postseason and this year was part of, do you think, Bill gave up on me. When everyone's done talking, Bill thought I couldn't do something, and I'm going to prove to everyone I can. How much do you buy into that?
Well, I would understand why Tom got that feeling. I really believe that Tom wanted to go back to New England and that it was his intention to finish out his career there and be able to do what he did this year again in New England and defy the odds like he's always defied the odds in terms of how long he could play and how he could defy really Mother Nature at this point. And one of the things that Bill's been really good at is moving on from players. And it's with a ruthless efficiency that other head coaches and other organizations haven't been able to do. And he's done it for years and years where New England legends have either been traded or cut or whatever the case may be. Now, for Tom, if you're there and you see it happen over and over and over again, at some point, you know it's probably going to happen to you. And it did. And Tom, I believe, finds motivation a lot of different ways, but that probably stung. And too, Nick, remember, there was the whole Jimmy Garoppolo situation even before that where there was discussion about moving on from Tom.
All right, so Russell Wilson went on Dan Patrick's show today and said, listen, I want a seat at the table when it comes to building my offensive line, figuring out personnel, and I don't have a seat at that table. One of the things that I find very impressive about you is just in talking football with you, even though I think you came from a very old school kind of football upbringing, your opinions on these things seem to be more evolved and more modernized than I think a lot of guys from, not that you're an older era, but from your kind of football upbringing. If you were running a team right now and you had a star quarterback, how much of a voice would you give him in the personnel side of things, understanding it's 2021 and guys have different expectations than they did in 2011, 2001, or 1991?
Well, Nick, the personnel side of it isn't as clear-cut as I think some people believe it is. And the decisions that have to be made, they aren't clean and apparent. There is a huge process that takes place between, if you just look at the draft process, the amount of research, the amount of reports that are written, the level of discussion, the slotting of the boards, there's hours and hours and hours of time that go into that. And so if someone wanted to be involved in that process, if Russell Wilson wanted to be involved in that process, I would love him to. But I would expect him to come in and actually do the things that you'd need to do to be able to make the decision that he wants to be a part of. I think he's smart. I think obviously it impacts him as much as anybody. But you just can't show up and say, okay, I want that guy, I want that guy, I want that guy. And then you also have to look at it in terms of, if you're talking about free agency, how does it fit into the salary cap? How does it fit into the locker room? There's layers to this that Russell could handle, and his input would probably be very valuable. But it is time-consuming, and you can't just show up and pick.
Coach, I appreciate you. Tell your son, that your best son, I forget which one it is, the one that's the Mahomes fan, tell him I feel badly for him. Your other sons that are the Brady fans, tell them I don't feel badly for them at all. I'll talk to you later, Coach. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you later, Nick.
Absolutely. There's my friend, Coach Eric Mangini. Here's Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Sometimes driving is great, but sometimes it's not so great, like when it's pouring outside, like when the snow is swirling. That's when you need new Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades designed to repel water, snow, and ice. Get yours today only at Walmart. So the Cowboys released a hype video to get fans ready for the 2021 season.
One important player
was pretty noticeably absent from said video. Dak Prescott, who has still not signed a long-term deal with the team, was not featured at any point in this video, which fans and media took notice of, obviously. Cowboys Director of Media and Programming, Derek Eagleton, said it was a simple mistake. He tweeted, "This was a simple oversight that should have been caught and corrected by us. Anyone who's making it seem like the Cowboys decision makers use social media videos to make statements doesn't understand or take the time to understand how it all works. Trust me, there's no story here." Look, perhaps this was just a simple oversight, as he stated. Perhaps. Perhaps it was not so simple, and someone said, don't put Dak in any of the preseason hype videos. We won't know, because how would we ever really get the truth on that? Because if anyone did in fact tell him, don't put Dak in it, if that got out, those persons would most assuredly be fired. Here's the thing. It's the Dallas Cowboys. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, if you're the Green Bay Packers, if you're the New England Patriots, if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, if you're an organization that we pay an incessant amount of time and attention to, whether you're good or bad, now the Patriots may drift off into the distance in a few years, who knows? Sure. But right now, we certainly do. These little slight things matter. So while it may have been a simple oversight, you have to understand the gravity of not putting Dak Prescott in a preseason hype video. Whether you think it's silly and nobody understands the process, which I can assure you people in the media absolutely understand the process of putting together these videos and what these all mean and how this all plays a role in everything that we do. So maybe you could be talking specifically to fans, because I hope he's not scolding the media on what this means. This matters. Like, maybe it was an oversight, but it does matter.
So here's, I think, the lesson companies can learn from this. And this is where I'll be a corporate person, someone that's good for the, I can't think,
a company man,
a company man. That's the word. Thank you, Joy. I don't speak for a living or anything, but it's honest. One of the things this network does brilliantly and really well, I feel, is they understand the importance of social media producers. They understand that for your company's brand, what you put on the internet is gonna be how so many people interact with you. So whether it's Lori Reyes on our show or Angelina Matarazzi, who used to be on First Things First and now is out there in LA, those are great professionals that know what they're doing. I'm not saying the Cowboys don't have that person, by the way. The Cowboys person might be excellent, but all of a sudden, if you don't prioritize that position and have that position be someone that really is buttoned up, you can put the wrong stuff out there and you can get yourself in a whole hell of a lot of trouble. And so I'm not saying the Cowboys person's the wrong person. I'm just saying they're either the wrong person or it's the right person who just made a mistake, or option C, which is the one you're alluding to. This is like a mind game they're playing with Dak. They're like, oh, Dak, you're not in our hype video. We're getting hype without you. Look at these Andy Dalton highlights.
That's what happened. But to your point, they have not prioritized Dak, and they did not sign him to a long-term deal. Not that they didn't offer him a deal, but they didn't get this done. So, and they had plenty of time to do that, and that sprinkles down. Like, how you're treated at the top sprinkles down to everyone else. Like, I'm not saying they don't respect him, but this is something. It's not everything. I'm just saying it's something. So the Buccaneers
It's something.
It's something, yes. The Buccaneers will have their work cut out for them to bring back most of their Super Bowl team when free agency begins. Bruce Arians is confident that it will happen, and he is thanking one of his stars who is already willing to take less money. He said Mike Evans is the most unselfish superstar I've ever met. He's told us to use some of his money if we need to do contracts to keep the team together. They have quite a list of notable free agents: Chris Godwin, Shaq Barrett, Antonio Brown, Gronk, Lavonte David, and Ndamukong Suh, and Leonard Fournette, all of whom played a significant role in the success that they had this season and in the postseason. Mike Evans has 3 years remaining on his five-year, $82.5 million contract extension he signed in 2018. He has a cap hit of $16 million in each of the next three seasons, and he's already restructured his contract twice since initially signing his extension, which is pretty remarkable that he's offering that.
It is remarkable. I hope he actually, that wasn't just like in the champagne celebration that he said it. Like, oh, you give him some of my money. And now Bruce Arians like, no take backs, no give backs. You said it. I think, Joy, you saw something I think similar. I think sometimes winning breeds jealousy and I need mine. Sometimes it goes the other way, where guys are like, man, especially guys who have made a lot of money, I'm rich already. I'm gonna die with money left over. Like, this was so gratifying and so much fun. I think you saw it with the Chiefs some last year. Like, Mahomes got the $500 million and oddly left money on the table because of how it's structured. Then Travis Kelce signed an under-market extension. Like, I think you saw some of, guys, let's try to run this back. And if that does happen with Tampa, that's the best thing that can possibly happen for him. And I do think there is something of a Brady effect there, because Brady did, not at every point of his career, but the majority of contracts in his career, he took under market value, and he kind of sets the precedent for his teammates in that regard.
Yeah, when you do a good amount of winning, it's easier to leave money on the table. When you're seeing some of the benefits of outside money that comes in from winning, it's easier to leave money on the table. I don't count other people's pockets, and I'm not paying these contracts. So to me, I'm like, make as much money as you can, and if you want to leave money on the table, great. If you don't, perfectly fine with that as well, because this is what these guys do for a living.
Of course.
I also do not like using Brady as the standard for someone leaving money on the table. Mike Evans did not make Tom Brady money. Tom Brady is also married to the most successful supermodel in the world, who is worth, I don't have it in front of me, but like $300 million.
Half a billion.
Yeah, everyone dismisses that as if it's nothing.
Good amount.
It's not nothing at all. It's very, very significant. It's much easier to leave $20 million on the table when your wife and partner is worth $300 to $400 million. That's just like, we all know how to have a somewhat grasp of math and marriage. Like, that doesn't matter. So I don't like holding everyone to that standard. I do think that this is cool when guys do that. But I also don't like saying it's like incredibly unselfish, because then it kind of paints guys who get their money as being selfish, and that's just not true.
Right, as bad. And it also should not act, it's not expected.
Right.
If anyone does it, that's their own choice and good for them. But there is no expectation. If you're I want to make as much money as possible, God bless you. More power to you.
Exactly. So LaMelo Ball, I'm a fan, had an incredible performance last night in the Hornets' 119-94 win over the Rockets. He scored 24 points with 7 rebounds and 10 assists, but he also made a career-high 7 three-point shots, which makes him the youngest player ever to make 7 three-pointers in a single game. I was very excited to see how he would play in his rookie season and how he would look in the NBA. He has struggled a little bit in the mid-range. He was 0-for-6 for attempts inside the arc this game, and he's been up and down in that space overall. He's hitting 54.5% of his shots in the restricted area. So he's still working on his mid-range game, which obviously he's a rookie, he's working on a lot of things. But if he continues trending in this direction as establishing himself as a long-range shooter, it's going to open up what is his incredible ability to pass, which makes him an invaluable
weapon
to them.
Which is his best ability.
Yes, yes. So I love that he is emerging as a shooter.
And if he stays healthy, he's going to win Rookie of the Year without any shadow of a doubt. And now Weissman's been very good, but I do think people are going to, we'll see how it plays out. Steph, Clay, and Melo could have been a very interesting trio. Now, maybe Weissman, when he's missed the last couple weeks with a wrist sprain, I think. And so I nothing against him, and nobody even talks about Anthony Edwards for the Timberwolves, who are terrible once again. But Melo is the one that appears to be making the biggest impact right now for a, you know, decent Hornets team. There's joy with the news. Speaking of hoops.
Well, that's the news.
Thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Speaking of hoops, and speaking, I can never get that right, and speaking of the Warriors, Steve Kerr had some very interesting comments about what the Warriors are trying to do. Kevin Garnett had some very interesting comments about today's players versus yesteryear's players. They reminded me of each other. I'll explain that next. Nick Wright in for Colin on The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It's Nick Wright in for Colin, and for all your last-minute Valentine's Day needs, head to 1-800-FLOWERS right now. Get 24 multicolored roses for $34.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for just $10 more. To order, go to 1-800-FLOWERS.com, click the radio icon, and enter the code Herd. 30 minutes from now, Peter King joins us. He has so much information in this week's Monday Morning Quarterback. We will discuss all of that with him. 15 minutes from now, I will not abide any more of the Patrick Mahomes defamation that has gone on the last 40 hours since the end of the Super Bowl. We will discuss all of that in 15 minutes. But first, Kevin Garnett with a great take. And I love KG. But it is rare that you get a good take on current NBA players by a retired NBA player. Seems like everyone who doesn't play anymore is like, you know what stinks? Modern basketball. You know who's not great at modern basketball? Current players. But Kevin Garnett comes out with a perfectly logical and accurate take. Can we show it to the audience, please? And I'll read it to him when he talks about how the game has changed. Quote, I don't think guys from 20 years ago could play in this game. Steph Curry revolutionized things with being able to shoot it from distance with such consistency. I don't know if even the guards from 20 or 30 years ago could play in this time right here. It's creative. It's competitive. It's saucy. You'll get dropped. You'll get crossed over and break your ACL these days. He went on to talk about try to chase a guy corner to corner on three-point attempts. And what KG gets exactly right, and which with the folks who fetishize the 80s and early 90s and the physical defense and Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn and all of that fail to understand entirely is, while the game used to be more physical, it was so much less sophisticated on the defensive end that it was so much easier to defend. Now you do have to know, and KG, the full quote's great. You should read the whole interview in the New York Times. Talks about angles and the way the game has evolved and how it is so much more nuanced and difficult now. And that part is 100% true, and I wish more guys from an earlier era would recognize that. Because far too often, nostalgia can be, you know, to misquote Rick James, nostalgia is a hell of a drug, and it can make us recreate in our brain what basketball once was and downgrade what it is today. Now, that does not mean basketball today is without its flaws or faults. I do think the game's too reliant on three-point shooting. I don't blame anyone for that. It's just that people understand the math of it. And I do think that the game, aesthetically speaking, we're getting close to the Rubicon of only threes and layups. The lack of the mid-range game entirely does make the game slightly less watchable. So I do think those are fair critiques. But the most fair critique of the modern game is, does everyone understand what the goal is? Or are we too focused only on the final goal, which is a championship? And the reason I bring that up is Steve Kerr said something yesterday, and I really like Steve Kerr, that I found puzzling. The Warriors lost again. They've lost 3 of 4. They're currently out of the postseason. And Steph played, you know, in the mid-low 30s minutes-wise, and Steve Kerr was asked about Steph and his minutes, and here's what he said.
I'm into the long game. You know, we're
we're counting on having Steph here for a long time, many, many years ahead. And I'm not interested in grinding through this season. We're not throwing Steph out there for 40 minutes to chase wins. We got another game tomorrow. We want Steph to be playing at a high level for many years, so we're going to stay very disciplined and try to keep him at that 34, 35-minute mark.
So Steph played 36 minutes last night. He's averaging 33 minutes for the season. And last night was fine. They lost. It's not the end of the world. But what Steve Kerr said, where he said, I'm not trying to chase wins. Why? I understand that we need to be careful with guys' minutes, but I do think we could learn a bit, just like the older era could learn from this era. We could learn a bit from the older era that the regular seasons matter somewhat. And this idea that because Steph said that Klay's out, the Warriors should punt on this season, I think is totally misguided. I defend Patrick Mahomes next.